press it twice. Okay. All right, we're ready. We'll just leave it there. It's got you. Okay. All right, good morning, everyone. This is going to be sessions 1 and 2 before lunch. We're running a little late, but I think we should still be able to make it. Our first speaker is Joseph Grimes of SIL and the University of Hawaii, who will be talking about preserving data, the paper phase.
As the one that initiates the technology, I guess I won't apologize quite. Okay, what we're talking about is preserving data. Gary Simons has talked about endangered data, and I think I can show you some. Long, long ago, this is back in the 50s, I started to work on the Huichol language of Western Mexico, Ciudad-Aztecan language. There were any roads into the area. Animal and foot trails was it. Clusters of families spread widely around. You'd be half an hour from your nearest neighbors. No electrical service, no mail, nothing digital. It was a lot of fun, though. We had to pack in supplies so as not to deplete the supplies the people there had, which they would have been delighted to share with us, but that would have left them quite short come the end of the dry season. And we also had to figure on leaving time to work. We took out bottled gas, for example, rather than spend hours every day looking for firewood. Working with the language consultants, it was primarily text-based research. And once we got to a certain stage, it was all done monolingually, so that I wasn't asking them questions in Spanish and stuff like that once we got rolling. And that's been the basis of my documentation. Now, I got good advice, which was to get the best kind of notebook you can find locally, and a bound notebook, make sure it's a bound notebook, stay away from loose leaf and spiral like the plague. I kept this in the field, and later at home, and then for the last 18 years it's been sitting in a shipping container on the mainland. What happened to the container was it got relocated and somehow tilted, and the contents of the container kind of jammed against the door and broke the water seal, and then it rained and it leaked, and this is it. It smells like a soggy dog. Sniff at your own risk. I did my initial transcription with a fountain pen. Here it is. And left lots of space, as you can see, if you can distinguish one thing from another there. Fountain pen ink bleeds into the paper and it fades. And this has bleeded and faded. It also bleeds through to the other side, which can make things confusing. I made annotations with colored with regular pencil, but those are kind of hard to see. It doesn't bleed, though. And I did some underlining with colored pens, and that bleeds royally to the other side of the
paper.
Later, with more experience, I discovered India ink and filtering pen, grafting pen, and I've also used Kohinoor, but I like Rotring better, and Keufel and Esser bound surveyor's notebook. You know, the guys out on the road, back in the days when they scribbled, instead of doing everything digitally, they would carry these things around. And for some of the things that the previous speaker was talking about, where you just grab things as they go by, well, I would carry this around and tucked into my belt, and I've got the fastest pen west of the Pecos for grabbing things as they come. So I got a lot of that kind of information living in community. The Keufel and Esser surveyor's notebook, it's 100% high-grade rag stock. Very good, and it has a water-resistant surface sizing. So it doesn't bleed, it doesn't fade. It's great. I also found that with greater familiarity with the language, I had a lot fewer errors in my transcriptions to begin with. But that's another story. Let me introduce you to my best friend, the India ink pen. Got a nib that's large enough not to clog. Right now I'm using half a millimeter. I've used 0.35 millimeter successfully. And India ink, which is actually China ink, you know. Not quite sure why they call it India ink, but it's pretty much pure carbon with a little bit of sizing in it. It's the most permanent thing, the most legible thing I've come across. Rotring puts it out in cartridges, and I've found that those get problems because the cartridge sits on the shelf. Oh, yeah, bottled ink is acceptable to the Transport Safety Administration. It's less than 3 fluid ounces, so you can put it in your little plastic bag. I did that just a few months ago. But the cartridges do give problems because the stuff sits there on the shelf, especially in the stationery store. And it becomes as hard as the original Chinese ink block down on the bottom. So down here, you've got real ink. Up here, you've got a kind of a grayish something or other. So what I do is after I open up one of these cartridges, I install it, and then I uninstall it and drop in some ink from the bottle, and then everything works very smoothly. Found that out the hard way. You can see the little shoulder on the cartridge here, and it comes out here on the pen, so the bottom part of the cartridge is down here and the rest is up in the nib. It really works beautifully. I should say, as long as I'm talking along this line, that the nib needs to be washed out thoroughly with water every so often because it tends not to clog, but tend is not 100%, fails to clog. So, why all the fuss about paperwork? Well, we're trying to preserve language data, and what we're writing down is language data. But we don't want to just collect it. We want things for the language community that can be used, you know, 100 years from now. One of my Wichol friends last year was telling me, you talk like my grandfather. And I told him, yeah, it was your grandfather that taught me to talk. That's what they call seniority. For our colleagues and students, you know, this gives them stuff that they're not going to get in the textbooks. Posterity. We always want to be thinking about archiving. Where is this going to end up after I'm gone? Or maybe even before I've gone. And for ourselves, data for a lifetime. Use this stuff over and over in all kinds of contexts. Now, there is a messy stage, and that's really the core of what I'm talking about. A very messy stage, which I here illustrate. This was taken when I got my very first tape recorder. It was a portable, weighed 40 pounds. And we didn't have any electricity back in the Sierra. So we went for 2 months to a town, not in the Sierra, where we rented a house with a mutual couple, and we recorded during the hours when they had electricity, which was not 24 hours a day. And one of the things I found out right away was that speakers of languages consider that they have editing privileges, just as we do. Do you ever put your first draft out? Neither do they. And so we took what we had transcribed off of the tape, and then we got the reaction. This is with the same person who put it on the tape in the first place. So, well, what I really meant to say was, just as we do when we write a first draft or speak a first draft. And so we tried various, he tried various things. And that is what we ended up with. But making that change then entailed something else. Over here we had a reflexive possessive, and by changing the verb, we had to take a non-reflexive possessive. So one thing leads to another. There is also an oops factor. There are some evidentials that get sprinkled in through everything. And you get so you kind of don't notice them. And in transcribing, we didn't notice them until the second or third or fourth time around. Oh, yeah, evidential. I got this from a different source. This is a community source. And this just illustrates the general messiness of things. But I also had the experience of native speakers saying, you can't say that in our language. What I finally figured out it meant was the storytelling register and the readback register are quite different. They don't operate the same way. Because he had said it, you know, just 5 minutes before. So from there, we go on to think about archivability, and we've already been talking about that this morning. It's in these manuscripts where we have to go through the messiest stage. The consultant and the linguist, you know, they're getting used to each other. They're getting used to the recording medium. I'd never had a tape recorder before. Consultant had never had a microphone in front of him before. It takes time. We did some copy editing at his behest. He wanted it to come out different. Yeah, you know, as a representation of the language. This was his call, not mine. say language consultants have a right to a second draft too. But we don't want to overlook the slips of the tongue, false starts, all that. Again, we've just been talking about this. This is part of what we want to archive. When we have an audio source, if it's analog, we really want to digitize it. There's a media creep factor. Analog sources degrade quite fast, and every time you copy an analog tape to another analog tape, you degrade it. So you want to get it into digital form as far as you can. My original tapes, I wouldn't dare put them on a machine anywhere because I'm sure they would fall apart. The oxide would fall off. I have round two or round three tapes, and I've been talking with Nick Thieberger about getting together on them. Digitally, you can transcribe. You can use Toolbox or other tools to interlinearize and translate. You have a video source. Again, if it's analog, digitize it. Digital media creep is different. The thing that wears out is the medium. The data are just numbers as far as the computer is concerned, and they don't change from say, one CD to the next, or CD to DVD, or DVD to the next DVD. Manufacturers of these things tell you they're going to last for 50 years. That's the current word. Archivists tell you, give them 5 years if you're lucky. And, of course, we don't know what's coming around the corner technologically. Maybe someday we will get something that's closer to permanent. But, of course, nothing's permanent. Digital stuff, it's easier to annotate and especially to index. Okay, so that's our
archival data, text files,
conventional orthography in many cases. Probably want to get an IPA or phonology-based transcription in there. Just keep your sanity. Interlinearization via a digital dictionary, a dictionary that you build up at the same time as you're analyzing the text. High-quality translation so the reader can tell what was going on. What's it all about? We try to make stuff as theory independent as possible. Nothing is theory independent, but we try to maximize it so that somebody who comes at it from another angle isn't going to stumble all over it. Dictionary, same thing. Text-based, it's just the counterpart. We can put in a lot of examples into a digital dictionary that we don't have to publish. What else to archive is the secondary stuff that we were just hearing about, the usual. And there may be some very specific theory aware stuff where we use the data to corroborate or to knock down. Alternative ways of looking at it. And you might even want to put some of your unpublished work out there. Or arrange with your friendly neighborhood archivist to keep a hold on it until you come to a certain stopping place. Metadata, we heard about this morning, and we'll hear more about. Use the categories your archivist uses.
So you can find stuff and others can find stuff.
We still have about 8 to 10 minutes for questions, if anybody has them. Anything like that?
Yeah.
It's lovely to see some of those photos and to get a glimpse of another era. And as a collector of pens, I'm really interested in an excuse to buy some more pens, but I'm just wondering.
I don't get a commission.
But I also wonder, you know, in a period when we can easily scan those field notes,
mm-hmm.
how important it is, and also, you know, you made the point that, well, you should use locally available notebooks with a rotary pen is probably not locally available, so there's this issue of appropriate technology as well. How important is it now to have such a fancy pen up in Erie?
Well, to me it's still quite important, simply because, you know the old saying, there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip. I believe in redundancy as the best safeguard. If we're going to scan things, I want to have something to scan that I can read after it's scanned.
I have data notebooks that are less than 20 years old. And from pen to pen, I can read clearly or barely read at all. So when I dug that book out of his shipping container a few months ago, I opened it up carefully because of the water damage and was really shocked to see how clear the India ink stuff was. I think that book is older than I am. Comparing that stuff to some of my own data notebooks that are less than 20 years old, that's far better preserved. And he's been busy and I've been busy, and neither of us have gone around to scanning our field notebooks yet, even though we have good intentions. We haven't gotten around, and he's better off than I am for some of the stuff because of the choice of pen and ink.
Some of the pages of paper are stuck together, and I don't know if they can ever be scanned.
You mentioned pencil earlier, and I personally love to write in pencil, but it doesn't scan very well because it can be really light. But if you have theoretically a soft enough lead where your writing is dark enough, what are your thoughts on erasing what you've already transcribed? I mean, that's a whole other issue of, do you go back and erase what your first guess was?
I had drilled into me, cross out, don't erase. Okay. You only cross out with one line, because you may want to know what it said there before.
Yeah, right. May have been right.
In fact, I think there were some examples. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to ask, you gave a list of the reasons why you'd be documenting things for yourself, for posterity, all these things. And then you gave an example, or you gave obviously a photo of a very messy page.
Mm-hmm.
So preserving those things, as opposed to, say, scanning them, over, potentially wouldn't be any use, because it's like in a type of code for posterity and for, say, your students or whatever like that. So what would be the importance of, say, documenting these field notes in like a code? Only you would be able to understand these things.
Well, I don't know posterity very well. I've had enough experience in consulting with people to know that I can sometimes see things in their doodles and scratches.
Right.
They haven't noticed.
But isn't it also a question of set of time, energy, and space as well?
Sure.
Because, I mean, you know, you can just keep all your field notebooks and no one's going to understand for this idea, like, which, you know, like,
yep,
this should be preserved. But really, when it comes down to it, I mean, how long are you going to store these things for that are just potentially, I mean, of course, you know, potentially never going to be used or.
Yes, there's no guarantee that people are going to line up to use it.
Sure.
There's also the potential that maybe somebody will find it extremely useful.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you. I'm just seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I have to admit that in a past life as a computer programmer, I do almost everything I do is digital. So I very rarely resort to paper, unless we're, you know, walking or something, and I don't have a recorder or anything else.
Yes.
But I do use paper still.
Yeah.
And at this point, because I don't do serious interlinearization on paper, I don't do actual like collection of any sort. Mostly it's more just like I write a word down and make sure that I, you know, that later that evening I put it into my database,
mm-hmm,
or something. Do you think that it matters as much to keep this sort of ephemeral data where it's not even, there really is very little information in it?
There's this one zone,
mm-hmm,
like with the example I put up. A legitimate question to ask is, why did the consultant want to change this word to that word? What did he have in mind? Why did he feel he was fumbling at the beginning? Hadn't really, really locked on. Since I work in the area of lexicography a fair amount, that's the kind of thing I wonder about. And to know that this word has been confused with this word, there's a good reason why he put it in there to begin with. And there's a good reason why he took it out and put in the other one. And I get kind of curious about that sort of reason. See? But that's me.
So do we need track changes in toolbox?
What?
So do we need track changes in toolbox?
Yes.
Well, it's a thought.
Okay.
It's a thought.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
How do you preserve your audio tapes?
Well, so far I haven't done a very good job of it. I have re-recorded some back in the days when that was the only option. Now in the digital world, it's one of these things that I'm trying to get around to, which is not basic.
It's not our student jobs.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Thank you very much. We ran over, so we'll start in about 5 minutes. Will that be all right? We'll have time to change rooms.